to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunamu, Study and Joy. My guest today is Bob Bradley. Bob, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Hello, pleased to be with you.
Bob Bradley is from England and is joining me via Zoom. He is a professional facilitator, interviewer, and speaker, and his logo says, provoke thought, motivate action. Bob has recently visited Auckland and gave a presentation at the German-New Zealand Chamber of Commerce. Bob has extensive experience in leadership, not only in businesses, but also in not-for-profit organizations. Or, as Stephen Moore said in one of my recent interviews, for-purpose organizations. Bob, in the past, I've interviewed guests who were involved in social enterprises or charities. These are businesses or organizations that clearly focus on good deeds. However, for-profit businesses and organizations are often led by people who promote good ethics, look after their staff, and sometimes even better than charities do. What has been your experience in this respect?
Yes, interesting comment. I think, first of all, I'd say that we have to be careful about generalizing. There are always exceptions, so we can't say sweeping statements. All businesses of that sort are like this, and all profit, whatever, for-profit businesses are like this. I think there are always exceptions. There are always good people in every world. There are bad people in every world, sadly. And so I think we should be slightly careful. But I will fall into the trap and generalize myself, because I find the more applicable distinction is big versus small. And what I mean by that is, most people that I work with in small, medium businesses, most of my business, the businesses I work with are tens or hundreds of staff. The people leading them are absolutely passionate about their business. They really care about their product, their customers, their staff. You know, that's really important to them. It really matters. And I think that's true of for-profit businesses just as much as for purpose or not-for-profit businesses. It's all about the leader believing in what they're doing, whether that be for profit or not for profit. I don't think there's a massive difference between the two. As I say, my view of the world is it's actually more typically to do with scale. And as I say, there are exceptions to this, but I find large organizations, in my view, have a tendency to corrupt the people who work for them. And what I mean by that is they encourage them to think it's their job to do nasty, inhuman things, because that's their job in running the business. You know, we're all about making money. We don't care about individuals, don't care about human beings. That's not true. And I see that happening in big public sector as much as I do in big private sector organizations. It's a culture that seems to emerge in large organizations about power politics. It's about building my empire, or whatever else you might call it. As I say, I wouldn't generalize. I wouldn't say it's true of everybody. But the pattern I see is large organizations are the ones that encourage people to do what I would call bad things, very simplistically.
I think what I meant with the charities is really the expectations. What happens behind the scene is different, but the expectations are that they are good, they are doing good things for good people, for everybody. And what you say with a big scale, that reminds me of what you say with the state or then the community, because when you have and you see the impact of your work, you make it more personal. And I think that's really important, because then you're proud of what you produced. But if you're just doing the same action all the time and you never see the result and you don't see where it started, then...
No, I absolutely agree. It's when it's small enough that you can see the impact of what you do, and you can see the impact on human beings of what you do. As I say, it seems to me to be more about scale than necessarily the for-profit or not-for-profit dimension. There's been examples in the UK, and I won't name them, but I'm sure it's true in New Zealand as well. There have been examples of large charitable organisations that are nominally to do good in the world, having some people in them that are not, don't share the ethic necessarily, and have been there and done rather nasty things in some cases.
And I could imagine that if something like that comes to the public, or even if it come if it's known among the staff, then they say, "Oh, if they do it, then I can do it," and that spreads then through the whole organization.
Absolutely, the culture of the organization is absolutely critical.
Maybe we should connect non-for-profit more to the tax payments.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, and so I mentioned now the NPOs as for-purpose organizations, as it was suggested. However, I do believe that this expression doesn't distinguish charities from businesses necessary. You mentioned now the scale. What else would you see as differences? How do you distinguish a charity? What was charity for you?
Well, I wouldn't distinguish massively between charities, third sector, public sector. They're all organizations that need to be led, need to be doing something good in the world. They've all got to work within budgets. They've all got to get somebody to finance what they're doing. Yes, there are subtle differences, but as long as the business is built in the right way and they're clear about the purpose of the business, then a business can be doing good in the world as much as a charity can be. For me, I mean, I could go on to it if you want, but a business is for solving problems. That's what businesses are there to do. They're solving problems in the world and solving them so well that people are delighted to throw money at them. We don't resent spending money on things that do us, that help us, that solve, solve us problem, make us feel good. So, I see business as potentially a good thing, as long, I would caveat, as it's set up in the right way.
I think that's really important, and also with the Charities Act that has just changed in New Zealand, it's now it's compulsory to put a purpose and to review your purpose every 3 years, which I think is a really good idea, because you can start a charity and then you can sidetrack and you forget what was the original reason, and it might be better to just rewrite the purpose and get a new setting rather than continuing with the old one, and people don't know what are they contributing to.
Interesting, because I would also I hadn't heard about that initiative. It sounds good, but I would actually extend from that and say businesses should be focused on, should have to have a purpose and should be clear about what their purpose is, because I think that's really good for businesses too. As I say, if a business's purpose is to solve this problem in the world and be paid for doing so, then that's much better than some businesses which aren't really clear about why they're there. They're just there for money. And to me, the best businesses have a clear and consistent purpose and vision about what they're there to do. We stand for this. This is what we represent, and this is what we're really good at, and what we're really focused on. I don't think businesses should start by focusing on money at all.
And they can supply a service, for example. But when you say regarding the charities, one of the reasons why I think the Charities Commission can ask for these things is because people want to have the charity status, and because that exempts them of taxes. Whereas, what kind of power does the government have to enforce a business to write down the purpose? Because I think that some would be really struggling if they have to write down the purpose every 3 years.
Interesting. I would argue the government has just as much power to regulate companies as it, and indeed should use its power to regulate companies as much as it does charities. And I think companies should have a purpose. I mean, I have a in the UK, and I'm guessing New Zealand, because your laws are relatively similar to ours. Companies are currently the directors are accountable for to the shareholders, the stakeholders only. Now, my personal view is that's incorrect. That isn't the best way of setting businesses up. That I think businesses should formally be accountable, not just to shareholders, but formally should be accountable to shareholders, staff, customers, and the wider community. And directors should be able to show that they're acting in the interests of all parties and not just the shareholders. I think that would lead to much better businesses. I still think there'd be a space for charities. I don't think there'd be different. I think there'd be different to charities, but because they're funded differently. But I don't, I think business should be for purpose as well. I mean, I could rant on about that a little bit more, even if you just give me the privilege, actually, because I think you
Yes,
see what I
give
think
me
is.
if you give us some examples of that, that would be interesting.
Yeah, well, if you look at how a business starts up,
Yeah.
I think if a business starts up by solving a problem and wanting to be really good at solving that problem, it creates an ethic that's a win-win ethic. We're here to solve the customer's problem. We're here to do a good, to employ good staff and give them a rewarding career. It creates a very positive culture. It creates a business that, to me, is contributing to the world. That's very different from somebody who starts with a spreadsheet and says, I want to make money, and who can I get it from? And who can I take it from? And how can I convince them to give it to me? That creates a win-lose mentality in the business. It's not about solving the client's problem. It's about ripping them off. It's about taking advantage of them. And that isn't a good business in my view. And I like to think, in my naivety, perhaps, that the second sort of business ultimately gets found out. The problem is, sadly, it can take many, many years to get found out, and they can become quite big and dangerous and damaging to the world before they get found out.
They
But you
can
do
create
see it happen.
victims. They can create victims who believe in their story around and give money or give services and are not paid.
Yeah, and you do see it happen. You do see large companies disappear because they've ultimately been found out as being, for want of a better word, corrupt. I can't remember the name of the company in the States, but Bernie Madoff rings a bell, the chief executive of a big financial company in the States that was ripping people off, and eventually they were caught with a mega, mega scandal. But it was far too late. And had that business been set up in the first place and regulated in the first place to be having to do good, then the directors, I think, might have been found out earlier.
Yeah, that's always a challenge. And I was just thinking about the change of culture when I've known a few companies that started small with one, two persons, like a startup, and they were doing really well. And then the second generation came, and the second generation was still okay, and the third generation just didn't understand the purpose anymore. And then it slowly, went downhill, and they sold it. Somebody else started. So I've seen that in a couple of places. And I always think, isn't this sad that you have the handing over to the next generation without really adapting or understanding the purpose?
Yeah, I agree. And there's a phrase I've come across, I don't know if it's used in New Zealand, of rags to riches to rags in three generations. The idea that, the entrepreneur that starts the business is very dedicated at doing a good job, focus on the customers. The next generation follow that on and build the business to the next stage. But then the third generation have always had money. They've always been well off, and they're not quite so focused on serving the customers, serving the staff. They just sort of think they're entitled to the money, and so they lose their way, and the business loses way. The purpose becomes looking after the owner's sort of hobbies, if you like, and they lose focus on what the business is there for, and the business declines in the third generation. I mean, that's again oversimplistic,
Yeah,
but
of
it's a
course.
story that I see come true far too often: is rags to riches to rags again in three generations.
But that's maybe an advantage with charities if you have a not somebody who owns the organization, and you have a board, a governing board, and a management board. Maybe that structure could be something that businesses even think about, or some business will have it in a different way.
Yes. And I think, as you say, a good business has got relatively detached, independent board with non-executive directors that are there to consider, is this business being well run in the right interests? As I say, the thing I would change, though, is the law that at the moment forces them to focus on one of the stakeholders in the business, the shareholders, rather than to all the stakeholders in the business.
Now, we've been talking about the impact outside of a company, with the small and the big company, and the services they provide or not provide, and the purpose they don't understand or they understand. What about the internal business inside the business? Because staff loyalty is sometimes today seen as old-fashioned. However, A healthy combination of the stability and experience of long-term staff and creative newcomers can create opportunities and be a motor to success. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would suggest that that's one aspect of diversity. You know, to me, diversity is really important. And I mean, in the way I'm using the word there, diversity of all sorts, certainly by gender, certainly race and whatever the sort of high profile forms of diversity are, but also experienced long-term staff and newcomers with new ideas and new ways of doing things, older people and younger people, all genders, all attitudes, all beliefs. To me, the most powerful teams are those that contain the most diverse range of backgrounds of all sorts. You know, in my business leader groups that I've been running for the last 20 years, the people running corporate subsidiaries, in my view, learn most from the people who left school at 16 with no qualifications and are running a small business. People who come from a family business learn from a corporate business. People who, you know, have got venture capital backing, you know, learn a lot from owner managers. It's the different perspectives that add value from based on different experiences. So to me, diversity of all sorts is important, as I say, including gender and including race and the mainstream stuff, but also in any other form of diversity as well.
Yeah, I think that it's like you have monoculture in the farm, in farming, or you have culture, you have a lot of crops at the same place. And I think that they help each other also, they make it's more solid. And I think that you can see that with people also. I have the experience with a diversity of religions, ethnicities, and languages that we learn from each other every day. And the beauty is that you don't have to be right about certain things. You have different opinions, and you already learn while just communicating with the people that, well, that's a different setting. And if you have customers who are diverse, it's good to have diverse staff, because then you understand the customers better, where they're coming from.
Absolutely. And I love your metaphor of nature there, actually, because, you know, nature thrives on diversity, and that's how the world works. And yeah, I think that's true in businesses and organizations of all sorts as well.
Yeah, so it's also about integrating people. When we are both Europeans, and Europe is a country where people came from different areas and settled for hundreds and thousands of years, and eventually some got merged, and now there are still people coming in. But it's about how to accept them and how to make them integrated in a way that they can all contribute. And you might have somebody, yeah. I
And
was.
I would add and learn from as well you know, the people that are different bring in new ways of doing things, and we learn always from those.
The other thing that I always like is what Goethe once said is, if you don't speak another language, you don't know anything about your own language. And I think that's the same with culture, with religion, and etc. If once you are in communication with somebody who is as much grown up in their language or culture as you are, and you say, oh, I never thought that this. I compare it to my own, and I say, oh, I learned so much when I started learning languages. I understood more where does a certain word comes from? Why do we say it like that? And especially, for example, with non-for-profit organizations, in German, it would be organizations that are profiting the community. That's if you translate it literally, which I think depicts the situation a lot better, because then it's not about profit or non-profit for the charity. It's about where it goes to, and it has to profit the
Yes.
community and not a sole person.
Yeah, I would ag agree very much with the German version of that, and I agree with your wider point is why I was in New Zealand. I mean, even you know, between the UK and New Zealand, there's very interesting differences in culture and attitudes, and it's 10 times that when you start to go into other parts of the world and other other sort of cultures in the wider sense, and other geographies. So yeah, I completely understand.
Bob, can you tell me a little bit about your presentations and your what you are doing with your customers? Because you are helping people understand their culture also, isn't it? Can you tell
Yes,
something about that?
I would say to a degree. I'm at the I'm in a good fortune. I've got the good fortune of being semi-retired. I've sort of stopped running operational businesses, and so spend about a third of my time being retired, I suppose. About a third of my time doing pro bono business work, and a third of my time being paid to do business work, which is great. But the things that I'm doing are now. The common theme to it all is focused on the businesses beyond startup but below corporate, tens or hundreds of staff. Where for me, for me, that's the fun area where real leadership makes a difference, getting people to do things. It's not about corporate politics, it's not about committees, and it's not just a small business where it's all about just doing stuff, really. It's lead where leadership comes to the fore, where strategy comes to the fore, where the challenge is growing the business. And you're absolutely right, culture is a big part of that. So it's leadership, strategy, growth, and culture really that are the sort of key themes in what I talk about, write about, and coach and mentor about.
I like your logo when it says provoke thought and motivate action, because you're not doing the action for them. You are not putting thoughts in their heads. You are provoking them. And I think that's really important, because you need to have that thought yourself as a business owner or as somebody who is working in a charity, and or is like I'm a volunteer on several charities. And it's always important that you motivate action, that you're not just doing it by yourself, but you have a group of people and you just plant seeds.
Exactly, the biblical metaphor of planting seeds is exactly the way I see it. I can't tell anyone what to do, and I'm not qualified to tell anyone what to do because, even if you're running a business very like the ones I've run, you're a different person with different objectives at a different time. So it's not, it would be very arrogant of me to say this is what you need to do. So I don't believe in that way of doing things. I believe I'm there to help people on, to provoke thought, as the logo says. It's to
Yes.
give them ideas, get them thinking, that hopefully helps them reach a better conclusion. And of course, there's no point in thinking about it if you don't do anything. So the second half is motivate them to do something about it. Very often, people sort of know what they need to do,
Yeah.
but they need a bit of a nudge, a bit of encouragement. And I'm there to do that. I'm there to motivate them to take action, to improve their business, to be more successful.
That's correct. And also the fact that you are from outside, you have the diversity of experience already. So you come with diverse experiences. If you had somebody who was working in a company or was maybe a company owner, and he's been in the business since he was a child because he got it from his father, he or she would be so immersed in that specific culture that it would be very hard to put him or herself outside the square and just to look like with an eagle eye instead of being on the table, and I think that's why when you come in and you can provoke the thought and encourage them to take action according to what they think is best.
Absolutely. It's something as I've had to learn. I think in when I was 21, I knew all the answers and knew what everybody should do in the world. And at 65, as I am now, I think I know less than I did when I was 21. I know now know how much I don't know, how much I still have to learn somehow in the rest of my life.
Yeah, well, that's why I call my organization Study Joy, because I think it's important to always study, and you have to have joy with it, because you can't learn without joy, because otherwise you're just ticking boxes and in the end you forget about it. But if you have joy with it, I think that you learn a lot easier and it'll stay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my hobby horses today is particularly applied to me, but I would encourage other people to think this way a bit as well. Is it's good for us to have goals and have objectives that we're trying to achieve, and I wouldn't sort of dismiss that out of hand. But I also think it's important to enjoy the journey, to know which direction you're going, and to enjoy going on that journey to get there. That's part of what life is about. You've got to enjoy what you're doing. There's no point in keep striving for some destination in the future that you never reach. That the goals are important, they have their place, but there's a limit to them. I think you also have to enjoy the journey you're on.
Maybe you have to consider the goals as milestones. And you
Yes.
reach one milestone after the other milestone, and then it's not so far away as a big goal in the horizon.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's the next milestone?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what is your next endeavor? Are you writing a book about your experiences?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. I think you probably remember me mentioning that. That's a good cue. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm in the process of writing a book, which will be reflect what I was saying just now about, not being the answer, but will be a set of 50 odd tips and tools and thoughts about leadership and leading businesses. So it will be more of a reference book than a reading book. But because that reflects the way that I used to read books, I used to start to read them and then never get beyond the first chapter because I was too busy. But I used to flick and I used to sometimes pull them out the shelf and look at them again because I thought, oh, I remember something in that book. So I'm really writing the book for me as I was 30 years ago, as something that as a bit of a reference book that you can flick through, think that looks interesting, that's interesting, that's interesting. Oh, I'm busy, I'll get on my work, put it on the shelf, and then think, ah, now there's something in that book about this challenge I'm facing. I'm sure there was a tip there from Bob. I'll go and have a look and read the tip. And if it resonates with me, as it, is a seed landing on fertile ground, as you referred to earlier, if it resonates, then I'll use it. If I don't like it, then don't use it. I'm there to give a load of tips that I think are useful, and people will pick and choose. And maybe they like 10 or 20 out of my 50. That's fine. Somebody else will like a different 10 or 20.
Oh, you would have to have a good glossary. Otherwise, if you remember vaguely that there was something, and then you will not, and you can't find it anymore, then you'd get quite frustrated. But if you have a good
Yep.
glossary and you have the keywords, I think that's really, really good.
Yes. Yep. It definitely will. They were well indexed.
What's the title? Do you have the title yet?
I'm playing around with that idea, and actually, what I'm playing around with is a title, Playing Your Cards Right. I'm thinking of 50 or 52 tips, and that, of course, corresponds to the 52 weeks in the year and the 52 cards in a pack of cards. So it's about playing your cards right. You don't have to play them all in the same order. You don't have to do number one, then number two, number three. It might be the right thing to do is to play the 17th card, the Jack of Spades or whatever, the first day, and then go to the Ace of Hearts the second day, and so on.
Okay, wonderful. I wish you all the best with the book, and that you have
Thank
many
you.
people who are going to read the book and will learn from it in a way that they just get maybe the right incentive on the right day, and that can be all the difference it makes.
Yeah,
Thank you
well,
so much.
my name's there. Watch this space. Probably early 2025. Look for a book arriving from Bob Bradley on thoughts, tips, and tools for business leaders.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me for this interview, Bob. It's been really interesting to learn about your experience with businesses and with charities. And I think that it's important that we know the purpose, and that we know that we are not perfect. And maybe we should not have the goals too far away, and so that we can reach the milestones. Thank you very much,
Absolutely.
Bob.
Thank you, dear, for inviting me along. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And just quickly, some information about Titi Bonamo Study in Joy. We have our next Bible stories session. It's about what do they mean? And again, it's like with a purpose. What do the stories mean? Because it's not all literally to be seen. So that's with Bible scholar Karen Finn on Sundays, the 7th and the 5th of May, 5 to 6 p.m. And then we have the Mystery of Miracles. That's a series on Mondays in April, starting from the 8th of April, every Monday until the end of April, 7 to 8:30. And then we have an on-site event, Stations of the Cross, Woodcraft and Reflections. Titi Bonamo Study in Joy has recently published a little booklet with reflections and prayers on the carvings that focus on hands. These booklets are available in English, Samoan, and now also in Fijian. The event will be held in Maria Sumpter Parish, and you will be able to meet the artist and the writer of the booklet. That's on Saturday, 23rd of May, 10 to 11:30 at Maria Sumpter Parish, Beechhaven, Auckland. For further information and registration, please check out my website at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you, Bob.
Thank you.